D3. Number 7B.
Somebody said just a few minutes ago to me, he said, you said yesterday we do away with God and men. You always go back and tell about God and men. Yes, I do. I shouldn't really. But you can see how one is tempted to take in those terms, God and men, because they are so easily to pinpoint really the whole range of the seven synonymous terms, and men for a name to symbolize the whole range of the infinite ideas. So I quite agree with this criticism that I really should stick a bit more to my guns and not speak so much about God and men. But that was the difficulty which Mrs. Eddy must have had in writing the textbook, that she could see, I can't start in to write a textbook about being, about what people were considering to be God and men, without mentioning God and men. And so she had to bring in first a better sense of God and a better sense of men, and just rising that standard and rising it and rising it, until finally she could say, what I really mean is principle and idea. So if I use again God and men, I quite agree that I fall back in the old terminology. We can't jump over our shadow, we say so in our language. Yeah. So, we go further to truth and love in science. There we come to the last column, and you see that there the tone or the synonym life is not mentioned. It's not, no more life, truth and love, it's just truth and love. Why? Because we have seen that on this level of absolute Christian science, life means the creative impulsion. That life means that spontaneous creative sense of being. Well, the moment we come to the fourth side of science, then in science there is never a creative impulsion, because science never creates anything. Science states what is. Science is concerned with the facts which are. And so just as 2 and 2 equal 4 has never been created, has never been brought into existence, but just are. So also in divine science, here we, or in absolute Christian science, we see here that in order to pinpoint what is happening in being at the point of science is only truth and love, namely truth is fulfilled. Truth, love, fulfilled. Truth is fulfilled. The work, truth, is done. Love. It's no more that there is an impulsion to bring out a new truth which has to be fulfilled. Now we begin to realize, when we look at it from a point of view of science, we begin to realize that everything under the sun is already a fact, truth, and that fact is absolutely perfect, love. So that we have never to deal with anything except with facts that are complete. The work that is done. Truth and love. So it gives a quite a higher sense of consciousness, an expanded sense of consciousness, which in practice is very helpful. In practice, therefore, at this point we begin to realize that we have never to bring forth a demonstration. If you would think that we have to bring forth a demonstration, bringing forth would be the impulsion of life. And so we would have had to have a sense of life. In practice, we see that we cannot bring forth health but that we can only see that health is the fact, and that fact is already perfect, truth and love. This takes away from the practitioner, naturally, that sense that he has to make a demonstration. To have to make, can you hear? To have to make is an impulsion, is a drive, which would be life. And this would be wrong. We can never make a demonstration. We can never make 2 and 2 equal 4. They are. And so, here at that point in the practice, we lose that sense of having to make a demonstration, of having to heal somebody, of having to make the grade. Well, in life practice, that I have to make a career, that I have to make a success of my life. All that is dominant in mortal and human consciousness, that we have a feeling that we have to make, that we have to be the father, that we have to be that which brings forth something good, that we are the creator of it, and that something has to be created. At the point of science, we arrive finally at the point where we say, everything which is true existed since ever. From everlasting to everlasting, that which is true was a fact. That fact had never to be created. And that fact is complete love. And so we begin to work from that standpoint. We begin to work on any case or on any problem, not by feeling how can I work this out, but by starting and see that the work is done. The work, truth, is done. Love. Now, if we could keep that sense alive and present in consciousness, then everything that comes to us in the way of positive or negative problems, in the way of new duties, in the way of a new enterprise, having to do something new which we have never done, which seems to be demanding some effort, some trying and some trial and so on, we just could sit back and see, now let's see this thing straight into the face. That which I have to accomplish is already established. Truth is already established. And before Abraham was, that was. No, that is. That is. And it is factual, truth, and it's complete. So think, whatever should come to you, say in business, that a new problem comes along, say that you have to do any new line of work. Let me say, if I have to give a new talk on a new subject, in a new town, to a new situation, well, humanly one thinks, how shall I do it? Can I find out the way to do it? And so on. That's false. There's a sense I have to be the creator. Whereas the fact here at this point, we will just sit back and say, wonderful. That whole thing is such an ideal in being, such an ideal fact in being, that it has an ideal fact in being, truth, that it has in itself everything which is needed. This perfect love. And so I would start out from that point and see that though I don't see the form of what it will have, though I don't know how to get the material to present it, how to know how to present it, how the things and how the that, I sit back in consciousness and know, but fundamentally that whole thing is already a complete fact, has a complete form, right now. Because I can't create anything which does not exist already right now. From before Abraham was, that is. And so I begin to be used by truth and love in the way that truth and love wants to use me. And therefore the ideas come to me, because truth is always translating itself to the individual situation, is always adapting itself to the individual situation, and just bring forth right that which truth wants to bring forth as the ideal truth and love. It's so terrific, you know. Actually, when one has a fuller grasp of all the synonymous terms and blends them, you see, there, for instance, at that point, whenever, say, you are faced with a new situation where you don't know the answer, not from Adam, and you just are blank and don't know what to do, just put it right away, and you see that which is true, and the form of it is established. It's truth. And it's of the nature of completion, love, truth and love. And then you see, because these terms combine all the other synonymous terms, you see, therefore, that form of perfection is mind-inspired. Therefore, it is spirit unfolded. It's soul identified. It's principle interpreted. It's life maintained. Life visualized. Life and life. It's truth dominated. And it's love consummated. And you have a feeling, therefore it has everything which it needs. Therefore, that truth and love will come as mind to me and say, I give you the right idea. Spirit will come and say, I unfold that right idea the way I like to unfold it. Soul comes and says, I name and identify that very idea the way it needs to be identified. And principle comes and says, and I've jolly well interpreted so that you see it in its classification and categories, so that you can present it in a systematic and orderly way. And it says, it comes to me as life-inspired, as life and life, comes as a living idea to you, not as a theoretical idea to you, as something completely vivid and living and vivacious. Can you say vivacious?
Vivacious.
See. And that it is coming to me as truth demonstrated, as truth empowered, that I know that idea comes and has the whole demonstrating power of truth in it. It will do a job by itself. And it comes to us as love fulfilled. I know that love will jolly well care for every detail so that everything gets its blessing. Do you feel how all the human effort is out of the picture? All human effort. No human effort can make God work. We only would recognize that. That no human effort can make God work. If it can't, then let's be consistent. And let being work by itself and accept it the way it works. And so, in this way, we feel that we get into the right rhythm of consciousness. Yes. Now, this was Absolute Christian Science. I go further to the next category, the level of Christian Science. Now, let us first remind ourselves what Christian Science, what the office of Christian Science is. It is really to translate the absolute truth to the point of humanity, of mortal error, of fleshly error, to the point of view of mortality. It is that point where Christian Science becomes the physical healer and redeemer. It is that point where we take now the question of error into account, insofar as that we disprove the arguments of error. Up to now we have only taken truth and truth's infinite idea into account. In Christian Science we have seen Christian Science takes care of that relationship between truth and its opposite, and so is concerned with the nature of the opposite. Christian Science therefore must explain what error is, what mortal mind is, what matter is, what the five physical senses are, has to explain error, has to explain the relationship between truth and error, and how truth reacts on error so that error disappears. So all these questions are now under consideration, and we see that this is a very important point, because we cannot hold truth in consciousness without that this truth has its impact on error. Because, as Mrs. Eddy says, by the law of opposites, truth uncovers error. It's the law of opposites that is constantly at work, which says if something is true, then that which does not confirm with that truth must be wrong, and therefore must be corrected. So the law of opposites comes up here every time we consider those synonymous terms. Christian Science, so to say, must give the counter-proof for error. It must prove why error is nothing. Up to now, we have not proved why error is nothing. Up to now, our consciousness was dwelling in the realm of truth and of truth's idea, and therefore contemplating the relationship of truth to the ideas of truth. Actually, now it has that depth which says, and that truth is the truth not only in the realm of truth, but also in the realm of belief, and therefore is able to resolve beliefs. Here we must understand why nothing is nothing. Here we cannot just expel error by saying it is nothing. That can be done in divine science and in absolute Christian Science. But here in Christian Science, we cannot be satisfied by saying matter is nothing, mortal mind is nothing, evil is nothing, disease is nothing, and just say to all these counterfeits, they are nothing. We have to understand why they are nothing. And so here, these synonymous terms must give us a clue to show that. It is quite interesting, you see, that when one has seen, usually, something very big or new about the nature of truth, that somehow we experience that the very opposite is going to happen with us. That the very counterfeit seems to pop up in our lives. So often you will go to a lecture, to a talk, to a class, to a summer school, and you come home, and then one hears, you know, I came home so inspired, and then I met just the very opposite situation at home. It is just as if the very counterfeit would rise up. Yeah, sure, I hope so. I hope so. How else do we expect that the one truth is therefore analyzing and uncovering its opposite? The only thing is that we shouldn't chemicalize. The only thing is that we should rejoice in seeing how truth has analyze its opposite, and it's going to uncover and destroy its opposite. That's very natural, that's quite in line with the level of Christian Science. What is not natural is that we chemicalize. The very fact that the truth does demand for its demonstration as giving the counterproof to error is seen all over the place in the Bible. You know, the Bible would always see and show something terrific great, and right afterwards would show that one had to disprove the counter-argument. Jesus came out of the baptism, and the voice said, "You are the Son of God," and so on, and the next thing that Son of God had to meet was the devil. Devil leading him into the wilderness and said, "Come along, old boy, I will see if you can stand the temptation." Why should, you see, we would say, well, if the Holy Ghost has come upon us and the Spirit of God has said to us, "You are the Son of God," then why should we meet the devil? It is because of that law of opposites. That law of opposites demands that we can disprove the very opposite of what we have seen spiritually. Or if we take, there are hundreds of examples. See, like Jesus said, "I am the life and the resurrection." And the next thing that happened to him was that he was called to wake up Lazarus. He had died. He had to prove that he is the life and the resurrection. The moment he had said, "I am the light of the world," the blind man came along and said, "Come and heal me. Prove that you are the light of the world." And so in many, many ways we see that in the Bible, we see that in our lives. The moment we have seen something higher, the counterproof has to be given. So if you have seen something higher this weekend, if there comes along its opposite, think of it that it isn't the opposite. It's the truth at work bringing from undercover its opposite, so that it can be disproved, and therefore take it as a wonderful example. The only thing is that we should chemicalize. But how on earth are we not going to chemicalize? Well, those synonymous terms which we find here are going to show how we are not going to chemicalize. Because if you see what the synonymous terms are on that level of Christian Science, you will see that three new synonyms are introduced, which have not been used before, namely mind, spirit, and soul. Mind, spirit, and soul. These have not been used in the other levels, so we can see that these must accentuate the level of Christian Science, that these are the important terms on the level of Christian Science. Now, why are they? What is any form of error? Any form of disease? Any disharmony? Christian Science explains now the nature of error. That's the office of Christian Science. And says, all cause of evil, of disease, all cause of disharmony is mortal mind. This is the great theme running right through the textbook, stating it 100 times in 100 different ways, that everything starts with mortal mind. It never starts anything which is wrong with God, nor does anything start with man, nor anything with somebody else or with matter. It starts with mortal mind. Mortal mind is the cause of all discord. This mortal mind has its subjective state objectified as matter. So, mortal mind objectifies itself as a material manifestation, as a material manifestation in the body or anything like that, a bankrupt bank account or anything like that. It manifests itself somehow as an objectified state, which is still the subjective state of mortal mind. You have perhaps seen in studying the textbook that she speaks that matter is mortal mind objectified, but although that she says that that matter is mortal mind objectified, but also that matter is the subjective state of mortal mind. It's both. So, evil really develops from the belief of mortal mind. That mortal mind, thinking it is something else than mortal mind, that kitten looking into the mirror, seeing its own image and saying it's another kitten, and making it objectified instead of seeing that it is only subjective. And no error really would impress us in the least if it wouldn't be taken in through the five physical senses. So, mortal mind, matter, and the five physical senses, or you can also call it body, because body is mortal mind plus matter plus the physical senses. Without those three fundamental error, or the noumenon of evil, without these three, we would never take notice of anything which is disharmonious. If these three wouldn't be, we would have a jolly happy life. Because all what is evil, we realize through mortal mind, through beliefs. We objectify and say, it is this object, it is that person, and so on. We objectify as matter. And we take it in through the five physical senses. So, Mrs. Eddy could see that she would have to deal with these noumenon of evil or mortal mind in order to put the whole thing right. And therefore introduce three synonymous terms. Instead of mortal mind, she said, we can go out from the divine mind. Instead of matter, she could see that the reality of being, the substance of being, is spirit. So she introduced another substance than matter, namely spirit. So here we have spirit as substance. And she introduced soul as the fact about sense testimony, namely that soul always testifies rightly. That soul, through the spiritual sense of soul, through the spiritual understanding of soul, we identify everything divinely. So if we have mind, spirit, soul, instead of mortal mind, matter, and sense testimony, we cannot take notice or we cannot be cognizant of any form of evil. And that's the reason why, on the level of Christian Science, these three terms in different orders are introduced. I want to talk about this order after a break.